This is My Daddy Station. I'm Pooh. Classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM. Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
This is the Voice of Freedom. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon or good evening. As the case may be, wherever you're at. How many of you have read the new warning label on toothpaste lately? If not, you might be surprised. Now, you may not have one of the new toothpaste tubes yet. You see, these new warning labels that are required by the Food and Drug Administration on all fluoride toothpaste and dental care products is not required unless they were shipped as of or after April the 7th of 1997. So there's still a lot of old tubes of toothpaste and dental care products that have fluoride as an ingredient out there on the shelf, and that's what you may have still in your bathroom. But eventually, this will catch up to you, and as soon as you get one of the toothpastes or dental care products that contain fluoride that was shipped after April the 7th, 1997, then you're going to find a new label, and basically what it says is that it's poison, folks. You know, there's a lot of people who have been trying to tell us for many years, and I've done broadcasts on it in the early days of the Hour of the Time, probably right around 4.5 years ago, on fluoride and the effects of fluoride, and had some experts on who told us the truth about fluoride. That was a long time ago. But there have been people trying to tell us this since literally before I was born, ladies and gentlemen, trying to warn us about the dangers of fluoride. Now, I'm 54 years old, and all of these people over all of these years have been called lunatics, nuts, wackos, crazies. Fluoride is not dangerous. Fluoride is not poisonous. Fluoride cannot hurt you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the truth comes out. fluoride is poison. Not only can it kill you if you take enough of it, but small children are especially susceptible to the poisonous effects of fluoride. It can also destroy your teeth by causing something called fluorosis, which discolors the teeth, puts layers of fluoride in the teeth that cause the teeth in later years when pressure is exerted to crack and literally come apart in your mouth. And, you know, they're just now beginning to admit this after how many generations have been brushing their teeth with fluoride, how many generations have gone to the dentist and had fluoride treatments, how many cities have put fluoride in their water reservoirs. This is really serious stuff, folks. You know what it says on the label now, in small print? It says, quote, if you accidentally swallow more than used for brushing, seek professional help or contact a poison control center immediately. Immediately! Oh, wow! What's going on, folks? Why? Well, it's because everything that all these crazy, lunatic, nutty people have been trying to tell you all these years is really true. It's really true. Under the association seal of approval on the labels before, they used to say, quote, don't swallow. Use only a pea-sized amount for children under six, and children under six should be supervised while brushing with any toothpaste to prevent swallowing, end quote. Well, the truth is, little children do swallow, ladies and gentlemen. And this stuff is bad. And there are two other ingredients in toothpaste that are bad. Sorbitol, which is a liquid that keeps toothpaste from drying out. That's a laxative that could cause diarrhea in children. Or sodium lauryl sulfate, which is an ingredient that makes toothpaste foam. And that can also be diuretic. But the fluoride poses the most danger to children if swallowed, particularly to younger children. You see, fluoride is a drug. And before it was used as an ingredient in dental care products, it was a rat poison. It was sold as rat poison and contained the skull and bones. And the fluoride that is sent to the labs to be mixed in toothpaste as it is being manufactured is in a bottle that contains the skull and crossbones and is clearly marked poison. How about that? It's a drug. Even though it's an over-the-counter drug, we're altering the body when we brush our teeth with a fluoride toothpaste, our tooth gel, folks. And you have to understand that. You're adding something in your body that actually gets into your bones and in your teeth and can cause you terrible problems. And for children, it can actually kill them in the right amount. You see, children aren't yet in control of their swallowing reflex. And children 4 to 6 years old typically swallow toothpaste when brushing. It's not unusual. And that's why it's recommended that children get only a pea-sized amount of toothpaste, because most of that goes down their throats. And a 1995 study at the Medical College of Georgia School of Dentistry found that about half the children this age don't spit out or rinse out. They just swallow the toothpaste instead. Making matters worse, they tend to use too much toothpaste on their own, especially when they use flavored children's toothpaste, folks. Now, toothpaste, listen to this. This just blows my mind because all these years, the American Dental Association and the United States government, the Food and Drug Administration, and the American Medical Association have been telling us that fluoride is safe, that it cannot possibly hurt you, that it's okay to brush your teeth with it, it's okay to put it in the water supply. In fact, they encourage cities and communities to do that. They encouraged and people to brush their teeth with fluoride toothpaste and go down and get fluoride treatments when you go to your dentist. But fluoride is dangerous, folks. It can cause a condition known as fluorosis that discolors or spots developing teeth. Research conducted by the School of Dental Medicine at the University of Connecticut Health Center concluded that brushing with more than a pea-sized amount of toothpaste more than once daily contributed to most of the fluorosis cases it observed in young children. Now listen to me carefully. Most of you are teaching your children to brush after every meal. You're putting a big long strip of toothpaste on that toothbrush. and plus your water supply is fluoridated. Listen to me carefully. You've got to stop this. Listen to me carefully. Research conducted by the School of Dental Medicine at the University of Connecticut Health Center concluded, listen, folks, listen very carefully, concluded that brushing with more than a pea-sized amount of toothpaste more than once daily contributed to most of the fluorosis cases it observed in young children. And in areas where the drinking water contains fluoride, children who swallow even the pea-sized amount of toothpaste can be poisoned by fluoride, and their teeth can be forever and irreversibly ruined, because fluorosis cannot be reversed. It can't be changed. The teeth become horribly discolored. And in the veins where the fluoride has lodged, where this fluorosis has occurred, eventually, if pressure is applied to the tooth, such as you go to bite an ice cube, or you accidentally get a piece of the bone when you're chewing on a rib, it can cause the entire tooth to just literally disintegrate in your mouth. It just cracks and falls apart. So, you know, I don't know what it is that makes people disregard scientific fact and disregard the warnings that people give for years and years and years. And you see, just because some organization has a name that says American Dental Association doesn't make them right, ladies and gentlemen. Just because it has a name, Food and Drug Administration, doesn't make them right. These are headed by political appointees whose campaigns are financed by large corporations. Well, some of the largest corporations are the ones that manufacture aluminum. The byproduct from the manufacture of aluminum is fluoride. In the early days, they didn't know what to do with it. They had so much of it, they didn't know what to do with it. The only thing it was good for was rat poison. So they sold it as rat poison, but nobody needed that much rat poison. So they tried to get rid of it. They tried to dump it in water, and then people wouldn't let them dump it in water because it was poison. And they tried to dig holes in the ground and dump it there, and people wouldn't let them do that because it's poison. So they had to figure out a way to get rid of this stuff. And you know what they figured out? They figured out, hey, let's sell it to people and put it in toothpaste and dental products, and we'll make this other big industry, and we won't have to get rid of it. They'll come and pay us to haul it away. Now, folks, you know, that may be a little bit of an exaggeration, or it may not be, because corporations have been known to do things much worse than that. Don't go away. I shall return right after this briefest of pauses. This is the Hour of the Don, and I'm William Cooper. I meant to tell you and forgot, folks. Last night, you did not hear the rerun of The Hour of the Time because the tape machine in the studio ate the tape. Just literally ate the tape. So we had nothing to give you. And we had no other reruns here. We had no past reruns here. They're all with Annie in her office because she has to have the masters to make tapes when people order copies. So we had nothing here to give you for The Hour of the Time. And so we did music until... until it got to me. You know, I was very upset that we were unable to air the rerun of The Hour of the Time at the normal time of 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern. And so at around half past the hour, we went off the satellite to save some money and just resumed our regular local programming here in the Round Valley. So anyway, that's what happened last night. If you were listening for The Hour of the Time and you did not hear it, at its normal rerun time. You're listening to the most dangerous radio host in America, that from a White House memo. And the label is from William Jefferson Clinton himself, with a feather in my cap. I've got to tell you, he couldn't have done more to help the ratings and the listenership of this broadcast than to say something like that. I don't know what gets into these people. You know, if I was him, I would never have said that. But he did, and I'm glad that he did, because it's true. The truth is the most terrible enemy to people who can't tell the truth. And that certainly fits this current administration. Riverside, California, July 29th, 1997. I've actually had this since July 29th, which was just a couple of days ago, folks. Three, I believe. Didn't get a chance to get it on the air for you until now. An Air National Guard helicopter pilot who witnessed the explosion of TWA Flight 800 believes the jetliner was downed by an explosive projectile, the Press Enterprise newspaper reported Tuesday. This is copyright 1997, the Press Enterprise, and where is that? It's also came off the Associated Press. The guy's name is Frederick C. Meyer. He's one of two helicopter pilots who was watching TWA Flight 800 and saw it explode. And he said he doesn't know what the projectile was or where it came from, but he said he saw an ordnance explosion near the plane. And he was a Vietnam War helicopter pilot. He's seen these things in the air many, many times. And the reason he's coming forward is because he doesn't like the fact that the government's not telling the truth. He said he saw it. He saw it. He says he knows what he saw, and he saw an ordnance explosion. And he told the Riverside, I guess that's Riverside, California, the Riverside newspaper, and whatever I saw, the explosion of the fuel was not the initiator of the event. It was one of the results. Something happened before that, which was the initiator of the disaster. I saw an ordnance explosion. Now, for those of you who don't know what an ordnance explosion is, it can only come from like an artillery shell, a missile, a hand grenade, some kind of bomb, but he said it exploded outside the airplane, ladies and gentlemen, which, and we know that what brought down Flight 800 was a missile. That's already been proven, but the government continues to deny it. There was at least 150 people who were credible witnesses who saw it. And if you want to count the ones who may not be so credible or may not be so sure of what they saw, there's at least 300. And if you want to really cull it out down to the very nitty-gritty, you can get down to 50 whose testimony could not be impeached in a million years. All say they saw a missile shoot up from the ocean and hit that plane. And there's more proof than that, but that's not what this broadcast today is all about. Also, I found another source, for something I told you years ago, ladies and gentlemen, that the Central Intelligence Agency and the intelligence community as a whole in this country is controlled by the secret societies. And this is from Secret Agenda by Jim Hoogan, Random House, copyright 1984. And this appears on page 48 and 49. I'm going to read it to you verbatim. And it's, quote, "My source said that the notes had been written by analysts assigned to the CIA's Office of Medical Services and Office of Security. Their concern, indeed, what seems to have been their panic, stems from the fact that Fitzgerald, the talented author of Fire in the Lake, was the daughter of the late Desmond Fitzgerald, a former deputy director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Indeed, Des Fitzgerald was a legendary figure within the agency and one of the original Knights Templar. End quote. It goes on to talk about him, and then there's footnotes about the Knights Templar that were the CIA officers who were close to William Donovan. And William Donovan, when he created the OSS, which was the forerunner to the Central Intelligence Agency, and of course all this was carried into the new agencies when they were created, surrounded himself with only take in those members of a secret society known as the Knights Templar. That's well known amongst researchers who researched the OSS, the Central Intelligence Agency, the Office of Naval Intelligence, and others. And, of course, the American public really doesn't know anything about this kind of stuff. When I made that allegation years ago, after having been a member of the Office of Naval Intelligence and revealing the way that I was selected for the Office of Naval Intelligence, and that there was no one, and I mean absolutely no one, who was in the Office of Naval Intelligence or the intelligence community that I knew of at the time that I was attached to the Office of Naval Intelligence, who was not a highly degreed Freemason, a member of the Rosa Cruci, the Knights Templar, and many others. There were also a lot of people heavily recruited from Brigham Young University, which is a Mormon university in the state of Utah. And when I asked about this, they told me that the Mormons were very good at keeping secrets and were well disciplined and would never question their orders. I don't know how true that is, folks, but I do know that the intelligence community has been from its very beginning, controlled by these secret societies, fraternal organizations, and in particular, the Knights Templar. If you don't believe that, I just gave you one source. There are a lot of other sources that I've given you in the past which confirm that. Everybody who's investigated the OSS and Wild Bill Donovan, who is the old man, the senior person within the intelligence community, he's gone now, but he's the one who set it all up. He's the one that made it work in the modern era anyway. And he began the whole thing by recruiting only those Knights Templars and surrounding himself with Knights Templars. The strange thing about it is that he himself was a Catholic, and the Knights Templars have sworn revenge against the Vatican, the Catholic Church, because the Pope and the King of France way back in 1307 moved against the Templars and literally destroyed their order in France and forced them to go underground in Europe and in the other places of the world where they existed. And then they became an extremely subversive group existing within the framework and the fabric of the other so-called fraternal orders, the mystery schools, and the secret societies ever since. So there you have that. For whatever it's worth, and it's only worth it to, you know, if you're trying to find out what's really going on and who's doing it and why and what it means, and or if you're just researching these subjects, or if you just have an interest in it. I've had a lot of letters from people telling me that they don't want to hear this kind of stuff because it doesn't mean anything. those are sheeple talking when I hear that. Well, I guess everybody has recovered sufficiently from the conference, those who attended, and should be home now. And we're getting ready for our Groom Lake excursion. I don't know if there's any places left open or not. We sent out a huge mailing to all of the members of our organizations and associates and people who have asked to be on our mailing list. And we know that as soon as those letters get into their hands, there will be no spots left at all. In fact, I hated to make that mailing because I might have to make two or three Groom Lake trips because of it. But that's neither here nor there. If you're a member of the radio listening audience and you want to make sure that you get in on this excursion to Area 51, also known as Groom Dry Lake, the place in the Nevada desert where strange things appear in the sky, owned and operated, tested by the United States government. And, you know, I videotaped these things, photographed them for many, many years. I was the one who let the world know the exact location of this place. And have been taking people there once a year for quite a while. So if you want to make sure that you're on this trip, send your fee, folks, overnight. You better do it overnight at this point. You can't depend upon the regular mail to get it here in time anymore. Better send it overnight. Make your check or money order payable to Harvest Trust and send it to the Harvest Trust P.O. Box 2470, Pine Top, Arizona, 85935. That's Harvest Trust, P.O. Box 2470, Pine Top, Arizona, 85935. I'm going to open the phones now and see what you guys are up to out there. You can talk about whatever you want to talk about. I don't care. I've been extremely busy lately. As you know, maybe you don't know, but some of you know, we're completely revamping our organizations. We're doing an awful lot of other things, doing a lot of preparations for this Groom Lake trip. I'm working on about three books concurrently and simultaneously, and trying to make the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network viable and successful. And that's a big job, folks. I don't know how many of you realize that most of this stuff I'm doing by myself. Of course, I get a lot of help from Connie, who comes in from 9 in the morning until 1 p.m. And, of course, Annie does all the shipping and handling and that kind of stuff. But most of the projects that we do around here, I do. I run the radio station. I run the network. I run the organizations. I do all the research. You know, it just becomes, I write the books and the articles, and thank goodness we've got some help now on Veritas. Veritas is going to press very shortly. In fact, it's almost at the paste-up stage, so you shouldn't be waiting for your copy of Veritas too much longer. And I want to thank all of you who have been waiting patiently for your patience and for your understanding. It's just, you know, we do around here what everybody else, with one or two people, what everybody else in the country takes millions of dollars and hundreds of people to do. For instance, we produce a full-size national newspaper, Veritas, with two people. Literally, two people. And the New York Times does the same thing with millions of dollars and hundreds of people. Well, we don't have millions of dollars. We don't even have thousands of dollars. In fact, most of the time, we don't even have hundreds of dollars. And sometimes, we don't even have tens of dollars. And we get it done with two people. So, you know, that's just what you have to understand about the things that we do. Somebody recently said the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network was not professional. No truer statement could have ever been spoken, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not a radio person. Don't have the slightest idea how to run a radio network, but we're doing it. I didn't know how to write a book or get it published, but I did it. I didn't know how to put a newspaper together and make it work and get it distributed around the country, but we did it. And we didn't know how to have a radio show. Didn't even know you could get on satellite, but we did that. We didn't know that we could create a network or how to do it or anything else, but we're doing it, and we're learning as we go along, and we make a success of it. I just thought it was so funny when we were accused of not being professional. Well, of course we're not professional. The definition of professional is something that you know so well that you can make your living at it, and people come to you just for that, you know, because, and you know, we don't know anything about it, and we're just struggling along. So just want to let you know that that we know we're not professional. Oh, boy. I'll tell you. You know, people, we're doing more than, in fact, we're doing thousands of times more than most of the people in the nation ever even began to even think that they could possibly do. And people want us to be perfect. That just amazes me, folks. Anyway, if you want to call in, the number is 520-333-4578. And let's hear what you're thinking about, what you've... what you got to say, what you're doing, what you're concerned about. Maybe you know something that's happening that I don't know about that you might want to talk about or alert people to. And if you want to do that, that's fine. The number is 520-333-4578. We're still having our monsoons here. It's wonderful. It's just wet, if you know what I mean. And I love it. It's great. But every once in a while, you can hear a little rumble in the background. That's a thunderstorm just sort of drifting by in the valley. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. It's Ron out here in California.
Hi, Ron. I'm still laughing from your presentation at the conference. You did a great job.
Oh, thanks for that. The audience was very gracious that they let me do that, and it was my first time, frankly, to ever do anything like that.
You did a great job, and when you talked about how fast the rockets go after they're launched and they're going up through the atmosphere and that the thermal layer starts at around 300 miles and they're going through this thermal layer at about 25,000 miles per hour, and then you made reference to the Bessemer steel process in the back of the book, I almost fell out of my chair.
Yeah, that's funny. But, you know, see, these are all facts that are in books that we can... read and come to these conclusions. You know, I was going to ask you something, now I forgot what it was.
Well, I'm sorry for throwing off your train of thought, but maybe it'll come to you later. But while I've got you on the phone, why don't we talk about this for a couple of minutes? You said that the thermal layer actually starts, thermal layer of the atmosphere actually starts at about 300 miles. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so. It was called the thermosphere.
Right.
And it was, I think, 250 miles to 300 miles in that area. And why they call it the thermosphere is because it was hot. It's not like cold. Space isn't cold like people think it is. And it's because of the radiation from the sun. And frankly, if that steel process, if that's what they use as a blast furnace, with that type of temperature to create steel out of iron ore.
Not just steel, but molten steel.
Right.
And that's just, what, 2,000 degrees at 300 miles an hour?
Yeah, that's what the book said.
And these guys are going through the thermosphere at 25,000 miles an hour with several, what the science books say is several thousand degrees, which means more than two. Isn't that amazing?
So that was something else. So what can I say? Oh, I know what I wanted to say now. There's another program, you know, the Chris Gerner program.
Uh-huh.
He invited me, not this Saturday, but next Saturday, to come back because he heard all about the conference.
Uh-huh.
So I thought what would be a good idea is I got a hold of Renee, and what we plan to do is I'm going to interview Renee, the author of the book NASA Moon to Berica, which is available through you, I believe still, that we're going to talk to him over the air and interview him about many of these things.
On Chris's show, American Exposé?
Yes.
That's a week from tomorrow?
Yes, a week from tomorrow, which is the 9th, I believe. And when I talked to Renee, he told me he has a lot to say about what's going on now with what they're doing in Mars with this little toy running around there in the desert. So he's going to have a lot to say about that, and I'll find out more information before I get prepared.
I'll bet he will have a lot to say about it.
Yeah, then we'll see how it goes. So.
Well, I can't wait. Folks, if you really want to have a good time and get your mind expanded and opened up and learn something and learn how to question, I highly recommend that you tune in a week from this Saturday, not tomorrow, but the following Saturday at 11 p.m. Let me see, that's 11 p.m. Eastern time, and that would be 8 p.m. Pacific time for Chris Gerner's American Exposé. And Ron, you're going to be a guest along with Renee?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm not going to miss it.
Oh, that's going to be good. It'll be nice knowing you're listening, Bill. I think a lot of you. I got to say about the conference, that was the nicest time I've ever... it was hard for me to sleep the last night when everyone stayed up, and just thinking about it, I drove all the way back home from that. It was just such a wonderful experience. I'll never forget it.
Well, I'm certainly happy that you enjoyed it so much. I did too. And boy, what I enjoy the most is the people like you and all of the other people who were there. That's what I look forward to, and that's what I really enjoy, is seeing just the most wonderful people who really care about this country and care about the truth, and who are inquisitive and don't accept what they're told without question, and you know, and are just such nice, family-oriented, and wonderful people. That's what really inspires me and makes me feel good about our annual conference.
Right. Well, I want to say so long to all the friends I made out there. Thank you so much for doing what you're doing, Bill.
Well, you're welcome.
And, anything else?
No, I can't think of anything.
Okay, I'm kind of talked out, so I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care. Yeah, folks, be sure and tune in. The Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. That's a week from tomorrow at 8 Pacific, 11 Eastern, for Chris Gerner's American Exposé. And Ron Howell and Renee, who wrote NASA Moon to America, are going to be the guests with Chris Gerner. And I think you're really going to, well, I know you're really going to like it. And it's going to rattle your tree if you've never heard anything like this before. But, folks, if you'll go check out the information that they talk about, you'll find out that it's all absolutely true. And it's just amazing. One of the things that Ron brought up at the conference, and, you know, I've talked about on this broadcast several times, is the fact that they just lie to us about basic scientific information that anybody can check in any high school physics book. But nobody ever does, so they just believe it blindly. And I got to tell you that in the beginning, I was the same way, and I just believed what NASA told me and never questioned it, and until I got my photography degree, to tell you the truth. And then I was looking at NASA photographs one day, and then it just jumped right at me. They were fake. They were just totally fake. And, you know, because I had obtained my degree in photography, and I knew about lighting at that time and all kinds of stuff, it was easy for me to spot. But it's easy for anybody to spot once you've been turned on to what to look for, and you realize that it's nothing more than common sense, really. It was just absolutely amazing. That knocked me right over, and it continues to. For instance, they tell us that the spacecraft, when it's on the way to the moon, was, you know, out there in space doing this slow roll so that as the side facing the sun got hot, it would roll over into the dark side and cool off in the sub-zero temperatures of space, and that's a lie. You can't have sub-zero temperatures in space. In fact, you can't have any temperature in space because there are no molecules in space to have a temperature. And if you'll look in your dictionary to see what heat and cold is, you'll find that it requires molecules to have hot or cold. So the sun's radiant energy striking a spacecraft in space can heat it up, to be sure. Just like the radiant energy from a barbecue pit fire can heat up a hot dog. And even if you turn it, it's still going to cook all the way through. The problem with what they told us about this slow roll in space of the space capsule is that as it rolled over, there was no cold. So it just kept absorbing heat and absorbing heat and absorbing heat if it was really out there. and there was no way to cool it off. And you know, they talk about the astronauts in their spacesuits on the moon and that the suits were air-conditioned. Ladies and gentlemen, to have air conditioning, you must have a heat exchanger. How can you have a heat exchanger when there is no atmosphere on the moon? You know, it's just little things like this that we all know that nobody ever asks any questions about. All of this stuff was just lies. And a lot of this is going to come out on the broadcast with Ron Howell and Renee on American Exposé with Chris Gerner a week from tomorrow. So I advise you all to tune in and listen. And don't dismiss it. Don't say, oh, man, just a bunch of nuts. You go check it out for yourself, folks. And it will just, I kid you not, folks, I'm not pulling your leg. When you realize, when it hits you, you will just literally be dumbstruck how really these people continue to fool us and make fools of us, to tell you the truth. But, you know, I prefer to think we make fools of ourselves because, you know, if we didn't just believe blindly what we're always told, nobody could make a fool of us. And that's the truth about that. 520-333-4578 is the number if you'd like to call in and have something to say. Want to ask a question. If something's going on that you want to alert others to, or I don't care what you want to talk about. If you want to talk about something, call in and talk about it. Because, folks, I don't have anything here to give you. So you got to participate in this little experiment this afternoon. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Yes, Bill. This is Fred in California.
Hi, Fred. How are you?
Oh, just fine, thank you. And I see you're doing fine.
Oh, yeah.
Or I hear it, at least. I wrote you one time or talked to you on the phone and told you about recording a news broadcast on one of the big three that documented the first news person to ride in, I believe it was the plane that was shot down, the U-2. It might have been the SR-71, but at any rate, the fellow was in the plane, and they went up to 70,000 plus feet, they said, and they had a little camera in the cockpit showing the reporter's little head bobbing about in his helmet there under the canopy, and guess what you saw through the canopy window? Stars.
Yeah, that, sure.
Yep. And
but you won't see stars in any of the NASA photographs because they couldn't fake the natural movement of the stars through the heavens from so many different positions and make them correct, because they would have been minutely studied by amateur astronomers and science buffs and space buffs all over the world. They just absolutely could not do that.
And as you talked about when you were talking about NASA Moon to America, the book, you also mentioned that they had gone to a lot of trouble to tell us that during the rocket flights on the Redstone rocket and in other pre-moonshot practice flights to get the feel of no gravity and such, the astronauts claimed in their books afterwards and in their comments that they couldn't see any stars from those altitudes.
Yes.
Which is ridiculous because...
You want to hear something else ridiculous?
Yeah.
On their way to the moon, they claimed they couldn't see any stars. And then when they got to the moon, they said they could see stars. Then they were so happy to see the stars again. Now, explain that to me.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Kind of makes you wonder, weren't they navigating by the use of a... forget the name of the instrument you use when you're navigating from shipboard to
sextant.
Stars.
Yes, it's a special sextant that they were using that was hooked up to computers, and they could also take visual fixes with the stars in case their computer navigation system failed. They would be able to navigate at least rudimentary navigation at the speeds they were traveling with visual fixes on stars. At least that's what was built into the system. But then they said they couldn't see the stars until they got to the moon, and then they could see the stars again. And then other astronauts said that they could see the stars fine.
Yeah.
But you won't see a star in any photograph taken by NASA during the Apollo, or by the astronauts, or by anything during the Apollo space program.
Well, it's a pattern of deception that is found all through government, from the highest to the lowest levels. It just seems to be something that bureaucracies naturally slide into for all those various reasons.
Yeah, and, you know, people poo-poo and say, oh, all this secret society stuff is just a bunch of baloney. Guess who was the head of NASA during the space program, during the Apollo program?
I'm blank there.
His name is Kleindienst. You know where he is now?
Huh.
As a reward for his great deception that he pulled over the eyes of the whole world, He is now the Supreme Grand Inspector General of the Southern Jurisdiction of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. His office is in the House of the Temple in Washington, D.C., 13 blocks from the White House.
Exactly, 13 blocks, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful. Well, there's an awful lot of fun to discovering the deception, and whether it's in the courts or wherever, and I sure do thank you and your program and Annie and your family and Veritas and everything that you've done, because it has opened up my eyes over the years, and I can't tell you, my life is just so much fun now, just on that basis alone, if it wasn't for everything else.
Well, you're not a sheeple anymore.
No, and it's and also my digestion is better and I sleep better, so that's you know, my stomach doesn't get in a knot anymore about these things, because I can at least laugh at them, and then I can go ahead and do something about it.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
It is. It really is. It's absolutely the greatest benefit, because you do need to have a little health and sanity and peace in your body in order to function in this world.
That's right.
I appreciate it.
Well,
so we'll just keep on. When is Veritas due to come out?
Pretty soon. We've been working on it pretty hard. We've got the format of the paper and the layout is, at least in the computer, is done. We're just plugging in stories now, and it'll go to press as soon as we get it printed out.
Wonderful. Well, I'll look forward to that, too.
Or I should say, after it's printed out, it's got to be pasted up, and then it'll go to press.
Sure. Well, we appreciate your efforts.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Oh, yes. Bye-bye.
520-333-4578 is the number. A lot of people find this kind of stuff hard to believe. And there was a time in my life, folks, if you'd have told me anything that I now know is true, I would have punched you in the mouth, thinking that you were some kind of weirdo, radical, treasonous person trying to destroy the United States government. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Bill. This is Dave from Southwest Michigan.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
And I'm holding here in my hand an article from the Kalamazoo Gazette, Sunday, July 13th. I don't know if you've seen this one yet.
I don't. How could I know? You haven't told me what it is.
Well, so Martians are drinking mineral water. And it was an Associated Press article. I'll pass a copy in the mail to you.
Okay, what's the gist of the article?
They claim that people she was talking to when she put this article together claim that on some of these images they're sending back from allegedly Mars on the latest spoof, there's an Avion spring water bottle in the background, and bottle caps, and lines of a lot of the stuff we've seen on the NASA photographs from the moon in the past.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me a bit.
That's true, but I wouldn't trust anything that comes out of a computer also, but it's good for a laugh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing that you can't do. You got to be very careful about digitized images and things that you get off the Internet. Anything that is digitized can be faked, and you can never, ever verify that it's true or false. You have to have analog, original photographs, things like that. If you don't, there's no way that you can detect forgery or fakery in digital stuff. And that's why they're trying to get everybody to go to digital. They're going to make, pretty soon, video cameras that you buy will all be digital. And once they're digital, you can go take a picture of, like, what happened to Rodney King, the Rodney King beating. You can videotape that and take it into court, and it won't be admissible because it can't be proven whether it really happened or not, because anything digitized can be created on a computer and can be completely fake.
That could be altered in any way without any way of tracing it.
That's absolutely correct. That's why we have to stay out of this digitized stuff, folks. It is not good for us at all. They can change history. They can change anything. They can change books, manuscripts, science, photographs. Everything can be changed once it's digitized. And if that's the only source of your information, then I guarantee you, you'll never, ever again in your life see the truth.
I've been having a lot of fun with this article, and I do have a copy of Renee's book. I'd like to get myself some more of those. I've been ran into a gentleman named James Collier, who's put a video together on NASA footage.
Yeah.
Just obvious anomalies, and I'm being real kind by choosing that word.
Mm-hmm.
Being received pretty well by most people, I'm surprised. I try to find something to open the door to get them to start to question this blind acceptance that they live in. And I'm having more success in this than anything I've ever tried. I can't believe it.
Well, that's because it's so obvious, and once people catch on, their common sense takes over, and they say, look at that. How come I never noticed that before? See, they've been fooling us all these years.
I tell people, if this is the greatest accomplishment in mankind's history, how come it's not on one of these cable channels every Sunday? Because they don't want you looking at the pictures too long. You will catch on.
That's right.
It's kind of like the Emperor's New Clothes.
Remember that tale. Exactly.
Well, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to toss a copy of this article into the mail for your files. I'm sure you'll get a kick out of it.
Okay.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And thank you for calling. Folks, I've got to tell you right now, the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network has a new broadcast that is debuting tomorrow. We'll debut on the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network tomorrow. It's a fantastic show. I've already got the first episode or the debut show that will air tomorrow. And in just a few minutes, I'm going to let you hear some of it. It's called Johnny Ray and Lonesome Bob's Very Fine Radio Show. and you'll hear a little bit of it in just a few minutes. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Bill, this is Chris calling you from Maine. I wanted to call your attention to an article in a publication called The Atlantic Monthly of August 1997. The article is the cover page article, Resurgence of a Deadly Disease. They are talking about malaria. Beginning with DDT, we've had very effective means of controlling the mosquito population. They refer to a new antibiotic or chemical-resistant strains in their article, so possibly they have a more effective population control device. I've researched their article in the 15th edition of the Merck Manual and discovered that Their basic assertions about the disease malaria are correct in their article. And I also happened to hear on Kathy McDaniel's program called Witness on 9.475 this afternoon. Kathy interviewed a physician who happened to mention that, if you can recall, some studies were done on the DDT, and they told us that DDT caused birds' eggs to soften.
Yeah, amongst a whole lot of other things.
Right. And according to this physician, the birds in the DDT study were deprived of calcium in their diets.
Well, that would sure make the eggs soften, wouldn't it?
It most certainly would. I will be happy to send you a copy of the tape of Kathy McDaniel's program along with a copy of the article.
Okay. I'd love to see it. But you know something? This is the truth. When I was a young boy, it didn't matter where you went, there were birds everywhere.
Sure.
And now there's not. I don't know why that is. I'm not saying it's because of DDT or anything. I'm saying that I don't know why that is. I just know that there were a lot of birds when I was a boy, and there are not a lot of birds now. And that bothers me.
It bothers me, too.
And I'm not an environmental freako or anything like that. But I do believe that we need to take care of what we have. Okay, yeah, I look forward to getting that. Thank you.
Take most of care, Bill. Good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. Okay, folks, listen. Listen to this. This is just I'm going to give you a few minutes of our new program that's debuting tomorrow. It's a two-hour show. It will be on every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 Eastern. And you can adjust for your own time zone. And if you don't know what time it is there, then I don't know how I can help you with that.
Sometimes you're the moon.
Make sure you call your local affiliate station, folks, whether it's of the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, Low Power FM, regular commercial AM or FM. Tune them in to this broadcast on satellite GE1, transponder 7, 7.56 audio. It's a killer, I got to tell you. For those of you who don't know who Johnny Ray is, he's the man who does the shooting show on the Outdoor Channel. He's made some big records in Nashville, and Lonesome Bob has made hundreds. Johnny Ray, Lonesome Bob's very fine radio show, debuting tomorrow, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 Eastern.
Straits with a song called The Bug. Aptly put, I think, goes along with my philosophy part of the time. Well, friends, we want to welcome all of you listening today, wherever you may be in this great country of ours. Our program is free to radio stations everywhere. We leave some time slots in for the local advertisers so the local stations can make some money on running our show. Heck, you can run it every day if you want to.
Sounds reasonable to me. As long as I don't have to do it every day, you know, because I got to take my time out for fishing.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lonesome Bob, you surrounded the buttons over there, and I feel for you there, because, you and I come from years ago. We remember when there was only one control on an electronic instrument, the on-off button.
That's right.
Well,
and it's a shame it had to deliver itself from that condition.
It worked a lot easier then. Well, friends, we do want to welcome our shooting show audience, because we want to do this project. It's going to help our entire broadcast project. Also, we're going to feature a program that was exciting, like the 1950s and 1960s radio programs that Lonesome Bob and I grew up listening to. We're going to play some songs you've heard of, some you haven't heard of, some artists that have been around for a while, and some that we're going to give them their first opportunity on national radio.
But here's a guy that's been around for a while, and I don't even know if he's got a record label behind him at this time, but he should have, because he is great. This guy's named Merle. You know which Merle it is?
The Haggard Merle?
Yeah, the Haggard Merle. That's the guy right there. Isn't this wonderful? Isn't this great?
My legs and my feet have walked till they can't hardly.
Well, folks, I think it's wonderful and I think it's great. I've heard the whole 2 hours and it is fantastic. You know what these two guys are doing? That I can't give you the feel for that in the time we have here. They're putting artists on the radio that you've never heard before in your life. And folks, I'm going to tell you that these artists and these songs that you're going to hear on this broadcast, Johnny Ray and Lonesome Bob's very fine radio show, should be in the number one position on the charts. They're that good. And you're going to hear, just like you're hearing now, some of the big-time stellar stars of the Nashville scene. All right here on the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. This is William Cooper for the Hour of the Time. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
If I've done my heart, 'cause you take me for granted.
Remember, Johnny Ray and Lonesome Bob's very fine radio show, debuting right here on the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network tomorrow, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 Eastern. Don't miss it. It's 2 hours of the best music you've ever heard in your life. Most of it you've never heard in your life and would never, ever, ever hear if it weren't for these two fine gentlemen.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a nonprofit community service.
This is the Voice of Freedom.